Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Healthy Tuesday, Carol. And I, according to my granddaughter, I am also the queen of the quarantine.
I like that.
That's my new moniker at this point, since we all are still speaking to each other almost a month into together as a family.
How many are in your house?
I must be doing something right. I must be lording over my kingdom in some ways that are helpful. Yes. How are you holding up?
Okay. I'm doing okay. You know, I missed my kids on Easter. One's in London, one's in Seattle. So I just ate a bunch of chocolate by myself. But other than that, you know, things are good.
I'm glad. And I think that there is a wide variety of being okay or doing good that a lot of us are experiencing. It's amazing how well we adapt as human beings. You know, quite often we have this incredible fear of change or things being different because we aren't sure we can cope or don't know what it'll look like. But research shows that people move through transitions much more quickly than they imagine they will. You know, we fear disappointment or loss or trauma, but we actually recover from those things much more quickly than we expect. And conversely, when we look forward to something and we can't wait and we have this incredible experience, that joy doesn't usually last as long as we hope it will either. So as human beings, we are incredibly adaptable and we move through things and find, you know, ways to get by. And also we have this strong desire when things are thrown off in our life to move back to what we considered our normal, you know, to some level of normalcy, because that's where we feel familiar, where things feel familiar. But the tough thing about wanting to get back to what was normal or normalcy is that quite often what was our normal might not have been in our best interest. It might not have been supporting our mental health and well-being. Quite often that normal that we sustain in our lives is familiar, but it's not necessarily great. And we stay in that not great normal because we also strive to stay in a state of homeostasis, of balance. And so human beings, just like all systems and organisms, try to retain this sense of homeostasis, whatever that is. And so if anything shifts in our lives, we quickly try to get it back to what is familiar. And how we know that things are off balance is because we start to feel anxious or uncomfortable, or we don't sleep well, or we start to feel depressed. And so those are all signals to our psyche that things aren't okay, that we are out of balance. And so our go-to unconscious move is to do whatever we can to stop feeling uncomfortable, to stop feeling anxious. And so we're at this time where everything is uncomfortable, that we all are uncertain, that all of our homeostasis as a community and as individuals and as families have been thrown off. And so there is this drive pushing us to try to return to what was familiar, what is our normal or our normalcy. But we actually have this unique opportunity if we can handle standing in discomfort for a while to recreate what our homeostasis or our normalcy looks like. And people rarely ever make the drastic changes they need to do to recreate a new normal because it's really painful making changes at all. Even if they are changes that would greatly enhance our lives, the pain of change is generally too great for most people to sustain or to live in. And so they just continuously go back to what is familiar. And so I've been thinking about that because I saw an article that you might have seen pop up on Facebook or different social medias this last week called Prepare Yourself for the Ultimate Gaslighting. Did you happen to see that article? It was written by Julio Gambuto.
I did see that. A few different people were posting that one.
Yes. It really touched on a lot of things that I've been thinking about, as if he had jumped into conversations at our house and conversations that my friends are having. But if you didn't see the article, The overarching theme of that article was that, hey, you know, we have found ourselves in a time that we are kind of stopped, our economy stopped, our lives have stopped, but be prepared because in the coming weeks, the whole economic machine or the marketers and advertisers that push our economic machine are going to be gearing up to start selling you billions of dollars worth of products that you don't need, but promise to make you feel better. And he was reminding us that what drives the American dream is the advertising and marketing and the corporations and the material goods that we have been kind of told and promised if we purchase enough, will make us feel okay, will make us feel safe, will make us feel comfortable. But that's really a ruse. Although on some level, we all know that the new iPhone isn't going to make us feel better, or that new outfit isn't going to correct all of our disappointments, or purchasing a car is not going to make us cooler. But we have been so initiated into this American story that you're just one purchase away from perfection, that a lot of times we don't question it. And the problem with this driving American dream that's being pushed by the idea that we can purchase happiness is that we all live in some constant state of unhappiness because, as I said at the beginning, we only stay in this state of happiness for short periods of time, and then we adapt, and then we go back to our kind of set point of sadness or normal or just okay. And so purchases and advertising and marketing force us into this moment of, I bought this and I feel so great and I'll feel great forever if I can have it. But then that feeling goes down and you need to purchase again to keep that high going. So that was part of the article. But he also was talking about that, you know, we are going to be encouraged to get back to our lives the way they used to be and to not question it. And we'll be told, you know, things weren't as bad as we thought they were. Being in quarantine wasn't as horrible as you thought it was. Everything's just fine. Don't look behind the curtain. Everything's just go back to normal. But at the end, he says, this could be the time that we take a breath, even though things have been disrupted, that people don't know how they're going to pay their mortgage or their rent or where their job is going to be, that this is a traumatic time. But during this traumatic time, we do have the choice to either go back to the way things were that maybe weren't great, or to stay in that discomfort, to hold ourselves through this pain or trauma until we find a new normal. And very few people have the wherewithal and the resources to hold themselves in discomfort until they find a new way of being. But that's what he was throwing out there, and that's what stuck out for me. And so I wanted to have a conversation today about what it would take to recreate our normal, what normalcy looks like. You know, what would it mean to not just go back to working three jobs or trying to just constantly be busy or trying to constantly be moving towards something, or maybe not ever being comfortable in keeping up economically, or working in a job that really didn't make us happy, but we had to go. You know, is what we're going back to really in the best interest of your family or your mental health and well-being? This is a moment because you're already uncomfortable. Things have already blown up, right? We're already in a state of complete disarray and devastation and sadness and depression. You might as well double down in some ways and say, but do I want to go back to how I was living before this? Like, if this is horrific, is what I was living before that much better that I want to go back and start it up again? Or should I stay in the horrific long enough to figure out what would be a place I'd want to go back to? So that's where we're going today. And I invited my friend, Rhett Guter, to Zoom in with us this afternoon to have a conversation, because Rhett is an actor, a choreographer, a magician, a man of many talents. He's lived in New York. He's, you know, been on Broadway. He's traveled in shows all over. He's in the arts, fully in the arts, and his life has been completely disrupted and changed. And I wanted to get his perspective. He's also a different generation than I am. So he has another, you know, millennial perspective of what's happening for him and his generation. So I'm going to invite Rhett into the conversation. I'm also going to be opening up our phone lines in our kind of adaptive way. The number is 805-549-8855. So it's not our general number that you usually call to ask a question. It's 805-549-8855. Marisa will be answering the phone, I think, and Claire, and you can ask your question or leave your comment, and then Carol will pass it on to me. If you have Zoom and you'd like to Zoom in with Rhett and I, they'll give you the Zoom ID number and you can ask us in person, because we're really trying to be technologically hip today. We're trying. We'll see. But I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can also reach me through email, elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast our shows by visiting wherever you find your podcasts and look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe and our show will be loaded for you to listen whenever you're ready. And you can also follow us on Facebook or Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. There are some kind of fun pictures of our family in quarantine. My husband and my granddaughter have worked on a vegetable garden with a scarecrow that's wearing a disco shirt and old CDs. There's pictures of the family bike rides and pictures of us just kind of doing our thing. So we'd love you to join us on Instagram or Facebook. As always, I appreciate you being part of this conversation. We're going to take a quick break and be back to speak with Rhett Guter. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
It's a time to buy. Time for shopping, going to the store and make a choice. But everything she sees, it's like they're talking, talking at her with a different voice.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And welcome, Rhett Guter, to our Zoom show today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
So Rhett and I have known each other, I think it's been about 12 years now.
When you're at
PCPA, for those of you familiar with our Central Coast theater scene. And since then, you have had an incredible career in the arts, working in New York and working all through Europe on West Side Story, traveling, being in Utah, Connecticut. I'm thinking of all the places I've actually traveled to see you perform over the last 12 years. But you've had a very successful career. And I was invited you in because, again, you have a perspective of being in the arts. And I know those who make their living in the arts are really struggling. You were in New York before this. And so I would like you to talk a bit about what got, you know, where you are now and what's happened in the last month and a half to you and to your fellow artists.
Okay, yeah. Well, about a month ago now, I've started directing and choreographing a little bit more, sort of. I don't know that I've transitioning in my career as much as adding another branch to my career for the time being. And I was working on a brand new musical written by Peter Sham and Brad Carroll. We had been working on it for months, writing it, the music, the book, casting it, getting everything ready. We got through our second preview when things really heated up in New York City. We were just outside of New York City in New Jersey, and they made an announcement that we were going to close the show down and the show wouldn't be running. Long story short, we're going to try to come back with the show next year, next season. But I found myself sitting in my apartment in New York City. I distinctly remember the CDC coming with the newest update at the time, which was limiting engagements of less than 50 people at that time was the guideline. And that notification came in on my phone. And I thought, you know, I do theater, and my other source of income is magic, is close-up magic, which is mostly at restaurants and gatherings of people. And I thought, there's nothing for me to do here right now. And I have a feeling New York is probably going to get really bad. It seemed logical that it would probably be their worst hit city in America. And so I decided to pack up my car and drove across the country. And I came home, essentially, where I grew up, which is Southern Utah. And living in, with my sister, she has a spare room, and she's been very gracious and was encouraging of having me come in. But it's been a very, as everyone is experiencing, a very surreal experience to go from, you know, working every day, all day, collaborating with this full complement of artists, working on this brand new piece, to within a matter of days, it completely shutting down and being in my car with most of my belongings and driving across the country. You know, I intend to go back, obviously, when this is done. But even the trip across the country was interesting because I'd always wanted to do a cross-country trip. But of course, I did it in 3 days. I didn't really stop other than to get gas and to stay at two hotels. And, you know, every gas station I was with rubber gloves and disinfectant. And I didn't, you know, there was no food, there was no culture experience, there was no sightseeing. It just was a beeline through the middle of America while sort of observing the weirdness that was settling in each of these major cities as I rolled through to the West.
Did you feel like a little bit like a rebel living outside the social norm, traveling covertly across the country?
I did. I did have some concern. Even as I was leaving New York, I was like, what if they shut down the city before I get out? You know, there was talk of them shutting down the bridges and not letting people leave. And, you know, nothing like that happened. It was actually a very uneventful drive. It just was about 12 to 14 hours a day of driving 3 days straight, which is no small task. And now, you know, I find myself in Southern Utah. I was supposed to begin a job at the Utah Shakespeare Festival this summer. It was supposed to start in about a month now. They have just announced, they're one of the few theaters in the country actually that are still attempting the season. They're going to start a month later. So they're going to start mid-June now, hoping that things get cleared up enough. But even then, they're saying, we're not sure. We're going to keep moving forward. And, you know, all I can do is sort of say, well, I guess I'll stand by until the next job crops up.
So it just actually worked to your benefit that your family is in Utah and your next job happened to be out in Utah. So at least if they do open up, you're in a position of being able to work. But I think that's kind of rare because not many, I mean, from what I've seen, most companies have called them out.
Yeah, it's very rare. Most theaters have canceled till about September for now.
So, Carol, I think you held up the question sign. We have a call.
We do. Lily from Shell Beach wants to ask you, Elizabeth, and maybe the audience, and maybe you too, Rhett, what insights and life hacks do you have to offer others to get through this difficult time? Lily's used to spending like 2 hours a day in the yoga studio, and instead she's been taking 3-hour walks in nature, listening to inspirational podcasts, but it sounds like she needs some more ideas.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Lily. Thanks for calling. And so, Brett, I'll throw it to you first because I know you to be someone who's very active. With dance and getting out and doing things. So how have you shifted your day to day? What, and you're living at your sister's. So what are you doing to keep your sanity?
Well, I go, luckily being in Southern Utah, it's really gorgeous. So I get outside at least once a day for a hike or a mountain bike or a long walk. You know, going back to sort of what you were talking about in the beginning of the show, I am not trying to replicate or find a placeholder for things I used to do. I'm just trying to accept things for what they are and mm-hmm. find joy in what is available to me, which is quite frankly a lot. My family, I'm now very close to my family and I have a lot of time with them. I'm not on the East Coast in a big city. I'm in Utah where it's very, the weather's beautiful. It's open. The scenery is gorgeous, so I'm outside as much as I can, obviously in a healthy way. I have found time to work on projects, smaller independent projects, like things as simple as reading a book or developing a new magic trick or writing a new show that I haven't I've put off for years, you know, and these things aren't really replacing something I did as much as taking advantage of what I have available to me now. And I think there's a lot of silver linings and little pots of things that we have not stopped and smelled the proverbial roses for a while. And now there's time to do that.
So two things. One, you have this love of magic that you kind of refound over the last few years. And in some ways, it's almost like you were prepared for the pandemic because you kind of refound a hobby or a passion, right? That you could go back and really start to, because most people don't have the time to really do that. And I think something that's come up over the last few weeks on the show is, what do we do instead of sitting on our screens? And how do we find that thing? And so you have that, like, magic can be all in consuming. And the question was, how do we find something that gives us kind of a flow or something that we can consumed by? Because you can't go for 8-hour hikes every day. Now, I think that's part of the struggle right now, is that everyone says, well, I'm getting outdoors more and I'm doing hiking or biking, but you can't do that for 10 hours or 12 hours a day. And so there has to be something between just completely being lost in Netflix or, you know, laying on the floor and exercising for 10 hours a day. And I think a lot of us, because our lives are so busy and so full, and we're just trying to keep up, and it's so easy to revert to screens when we have downtime, that we've lost the art of spending time in other ways, like practicing magic or whatever that other interest might be, or working on choreography in a way that you hadn't before, or reading a book. And I don't know if it was hard for you. And that's a question also for listeners. You know, have you found yourself being able to slow down enough and take on new ideas like sewing? Or I'm trying to think of things that, you know, like my husband hasn't gardened in many years because our lives have been so busy. And all of a sudden over the last month, this is a beautiful vegetable garden. I can see him loving this opportunity to do this again. But there is a real training of our muscle memory or our mind to be able to slow down enough to do hobby energy things. It's a whole different use of our energy. And I think our go-to has always been to go really hard and then get lost in Netflix and go really hard and get lost in Netflix. But that in-between time is, that's what's opened for us now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the thing I keep asking myself is, how different would this be if this had happened 20 years ago? Mm-hmm. Because the transferring of information is so fluid now. I mean, but obviously we can talk to people, and this very conversation is happening over Zoom. But also the amount of information and educational things that are available, you know, masterclass is out now, and there's a myriad of other examples of that. But I think I'm taking a cooking series on masterclass because that's something that I enjoy doing, but I don't ever really have time to do. So that is something sort of new that I'm carving an hour or two out a day to sort of look at and go practice. And I think there is really actually opportunity, especially with where technology is, for the good and the bad, to explore some new things.
But then I'm trying to anticipate what people are thinking as they're listening to this, who don't know where their next paycheck is going to come from, or don't know how they're going to, if they're going to have a job to go back to. You know, all the ways that things are devastating right now. How, you know, how do we manage the crisis and come out and find opportunity when the basics aren't being met? Because, you know, that doesn't seem to be a reality, and that's who I'd be. You know, I've had very few conversations with people who are willing to really talk about the ways that things are devastating. You know, that I think we've become very good at the silver linings part, sure, but we're not talking about what's devastating. And as this article kind of triggered in me was the conversation of, we need to talk about how things were before this so that we can try to take advantage of this opportunity to change a lifestyle or habits or a work environment that wasn't serving us then. Because to me, that's the real challenge in the silver linings, is if we can live in the devastation or fear or concern we're in now, but still critically look at our life as it was prior to the pandemic and say, but I don't want to go back there. I don't want to have to work three jobs, or I don't want to only see my children for an hour a day, or I, you know, whatever that was. And to have the courage to sit in the continuous devastation until a new opportunity arises. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is my friend, Rhett Guter. He's an artist, musician, choreographer, magician, and he's spending his pandemic time in Southern Utah, having left New York City right before things got really dangerous. And you can be part of our conversation. Our number to ask a question is 805-549-8855. Or you can Zoom into the meeting as well, Zoom into our conversation. Just give us a call and they'll give you that number. And this is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Carol, I think you held up the question sign.
I did. We have another question from a listener, Ryan, in San Luis Obispo, who says that he isn't really social and he usually feels like everyone else is out busy having fun. So for him, the shelter at home, it made him feel, you know, less like he was missing out because everybody was home. And he says he is dreading the return to normal because he feels then that he'll be the only one who, you know, kind of who feels isolated.
Well, Ryan, thank you for that, because that goes on a little bit about what I've been wondering, how people who are more introverted or less social are feeling, because as I said over the last few weeks, I really like this. Surprisingly, I really do well just kind of hanging out in my own head or hanging out with my family. And so this has been uniquely fun for me to have everything slow down, and it feels like everyone's going at my pace. But I've had that same feeling, Ryan, that we had a conversation at the table last night and the kids said, well, we'll probably be leaving in the next couple weeks. And I started to cry because I thought, well, wait a second. This is what I like. I don't want to go back to everyone being so busy that we're apart. So I appreciate that, Ryan, on that level, that you're right now in a comfort zone of normalcy that feels good. And how do you make that adjustment back where all of a sudden everyone revs up their life again and starts moving forward? And I don't think I have an answer for it. I can only commiserate or resonate with you on that level. And I guess part of the challenge is, how do we find comfort in our normal or our day-to-day comfort being okay for us and not feeling like we're missing out on what everyone else is doing because it looks like it's the American dream that we're not following. And it relates to the article that I brought up again, prepare yourself for the ultimate gaslighting, because part of the article talks about the advertising and marketing machine that drives our cultural story, that if you are winning at the American dream, it includes purchasing everything you can possibly imagine, from cars to phones to clothing to, you know, makeup and hair and traveling. It is an ongoing message that if you're not participating economically, you're somehow failing. And I think being able to step away from that message is key for all of us, whether we're introverts that like to stay at home or we're people who are generally super busy. But maybe at the end of the day, we're not as fulfilled as we think we should be, even though we're keeping up. What about you, Rhett? Thoughts on that? Do you consider yourself more of a social person because you know you're out and doing this work? Or are you liking the time solo?
I consider myself an introvert who has learned a lot of extrovert qualities. Being in theater and being a performer, you sort of learn to turn it on. Surprisingly, many actors, many even famous actors, a lot of them are considered introverts or consider themselves introverts. I have enjoyed the time alone. I don't really see the quote unquote return to normalcy with dread. I don't really think we will return to, we'll get to a new normal. The deck is definitely being, you know, restacked.
But what's that going to look like from your perspective? Like, what will it take for people to show up for a show?
That is the scariest thing for me, almost more than the income question, which I know a lot of people are dealing with and I'm dealing with too, is not knowing where my next real job or gig, as we refer to it, is coming from and where my next paycheck will come from. But for me, I'm sort of looking, and had a conversation with another friend who's an actor last night, talking about what is going to happen when they open these theaters, open these performance venues back up. Will people be starved for the experience and come rushing in? Or will it take months or even years for people to get used to the idea of being in large groups and close to people and sharing the same air again? And the question is, the answer is I have no idea. You know, what's also interesting is, as theater artists, I think any theater artist or any artist at all has a part of their brain that's sort of tracking, you know, the zeitgeist of the culture and of the country and where we're at, and what's going on. And there has been such a dramatic and quick change in the tone and experience of being an American and really just being a human right now, that I think artists almost need to take a second, as well as everyone else, to sort of take a step back and listen and observe and just try to understand what it is that we're doing, because it's a really big paradigm shift. And you know, people keep saying, well, what are you going to do? And what do you think? And what's the plan? And my answer is, there is none. And I think that's okay. And I think that for me, it's the hardest and the scariest thing to say, I don't have a plan. I don't know what's going to happen. And it's okay. I'm just going to be here, take advantage of what is good about it, and listen. It's an opportunity to listen and to reflect. And where that will lead me, I'm not sure yet. And, you know, as scary as it is, it's also kind of exciting.
Well, and you really are talking about being able to sit in the dissonance or discomfort and kind of trust that something will come up, that something will change. And there's also one of the reasons I also feel like this is such a powerful time is that generally when we experience devastation, loss of income, you know, loss of life, loss of our family structure, it's on an individual or a very small scale. But because we're all in this together, there's a more of a sense of opportunity and hope, because you have to just adapt. You have to slow down. And it's not because you're failing or should be trying harder to get work or should be doing something else. It's almost like we all have a pass, you know, an opportunity to say, this isn't just me falling behind or not keeping up. It's everyone. So I might as well sink in and just fully be in it.
I was talking to a friend and we were talking about this exact idea. And I asked myself, why is that? Why do I not feel the same when it's universal? And it dawned on me, I think it's because there isn't the shame or the guilt that is associated with being out of work, not making enough money, not being productive with my day. It usually comes with shame and guilt and comparison, you know. And that part of it has been taken away. So it's really interesting to experience the, you know, filing for unemployment, not having work, not knowing where my next job is going to be, without that shadow of shame and guilt, and you should be doing what, you know, Johnny's doing. It's a whole different way to experience this place of vulnerability without that element, which I think is the biggest kind of tweak in that.
And I think that really is where the gift is in this moment, if we can get quiet enough to look at it, because everyone is in the same boat. And you hit the nail on the head. There is no shame about where people are right now. And so you have bought yourself some time to see, what would I be or who would I be if I wasn't constantly just trying to keep up? Because from my perspective, if you look at the numbers of people who struggled prior to the pandemic, they were barely keeping up and were trying to keep up because they didn't want to feel ashamed or guilty because they lost a job or couldn't keep their home or, right, couldn't stay in California because it was too expensive. There was all that independent or personal embarrassment. But now you have an opportunity to say, you know what? That didn't, life didn't work out. That job went away. This opportunity wasn't there. And I took this time to reevaluate everything and make a move. And I can't imagine any person wouldn't say, good for you. And that's a totally different mindset than we had a month ago in this very individualistic culture, which was very much about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, and anyone who wasn't doing it was somehow failing. Like, this is your opportunity to say, I couldn't keep up with that, and I'm going to move on, and you're going to get full support. If you're just tuning in, this is The Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Rhett Guter. We're kind of talking about what's going on right now, the state of the world. I presented this article that came out just a couple of days ago called Prepare Yourself for the Ultimate Gaslighting, written by Julio Gambluto, if you want to read it. And if you'd like to be part of our conversation, you can ask a question by calling 805-549-8855. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back in a minute to take your calls.
Some boys kiss me, some boys hug me, I think they're okay.
You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest is Rhett Guter, my friend, artist, choreographer, magician. I can't even think of all the other terms that I can use too. If you have time and you're hanging out on YouTube, some of Rhett's dance moves, you can find them. for your pleasure. So let's talk about the arts in a new form, and what do we see moving forward? You know, will there be theaters? This would be my dream, in all honesty. Will there be theaters where there's actually room between the seats so that I don't have to sit squished next to the person in the seat next? That would be the greatest gift of this.
I think anything is possible at this point. I know the Utah Shakespeare Festival just on Monday announced yesterday that they're going to go forward with their season. They're cutting it down, but they are planning and budgeting 50% capacity so that there's a seat between every audience member. Whether that'll become, you know, whether this idea of more space will become permanent or not, I don't know. It's hard to say.
But that would be beautiful.
It would be beautiful.
Because I've heard the same, you know, for flying people on airlines right now, because very few people are flying, that it's like the old days where you had a whole row to yourself.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I'm wondering if one of the repercussions moving forward, or one of the unintended benefits, is a return a little bit more to civility. Because a lot of people have said that the pace of life, on one hand, has made us crankier. You know, this idea that we're moving 24/7, that we don't have patience for each other. But also how we've been crammed in together in airplanes and in theaters and places where the seats have gotten smaller, that makes people more edgy and, you know, less accommodating. That I wondered if the social distancing norms moving forward will help us to feel a little more spacious and gracious with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that it'll especially be interested, you know, being a resident of New York City, to see how that changes, you know, the subway situation and just how people treat each other and, you know, the willingness to the idea of personal space in New York City just doesn't exist, or it didn't a month ago. Maybe it's back now.
And I want you to think about this. You don't have to answer right away. I'll let you sit on it for a minute. But what's your greatest fear in all of this? Because you have such your general personality is one of kind of hopefulness and, you know, optimism. But what is the fears you have around what's happened in the last month?
My personal fear is that theater will go away for the foreseeable future, as we know it, and where many things have replaced a version of what we did before. You know, there's more content online and video streaming, and we're not seeing people in public. We're talking on Zoom. Theater doesn't really have that option. I mean, theater is unique in that it's live. The digital form of that has already been developed for the last 100 years in cinema. And so there is storytelling in cinema and on screen, but what I do is with both magic and theater is very much a live experience. And it is paramount that it's about people coming together and sharing ideas and storytelling in the same room. And it does scare me, honestly, that goes away. I don't think it will go away forever, but that it goes away for the foreseeable future or gets crippled. And you know, that there are many stalwarts of the theater organizations, regional theaters, Broadway is closed right now. All of the producing of theater is getting hit so hard that another big question I have is, well, when we do come back, who's going to be ready to spend, you know, $10 million to put up a Broadway show? Who's going to be willing to spend a couple $100,000 to produce a regional production? Who's going to be willing to, you know, have a group gathering of more than 100 people and hire a magician to walk and mingle and be within, you know, 2-3 feet of everyone? You know, where are we going to find ourselves? And that is completely, as an artist, what I have built my career on, is being in front of live people and in groups. And I think that's my single biggest fear, is what will the resolve of that be through all of this?
Part of my concern along the same lines is that we've already become so comfortable with Zoom, you know, watching things on YouTube and having watching theater. You know, I watched Saturday Night Live this weekend and they did it all kind of remote. And I know that's not live theater, but it's usually a live performance. Yeah. That because we're such adaptable species, such an adaptable species, that we will get too comfortable letting go of things that were familiar, like gathering in restaurants or in theaters, and that we will become even more adapted to technology and the distance that technology imposes in our lives, and that we'll become more accepting of, we don't hug each other anymore, or we don't, you know, because we're good at adapting, my fear is that we'll adapt our ways out of those things that make us human and social and connected and become more robotic.
Yeah. I have to believe that we won't. I mean, but am I being naive in saying that? I don't know. It seems to be, you know, these are the things of science fiction. How many science fiction books, movies have dealt with these sort of themes of, as we gain more access to technology, do we lean on it and let go of our human connection? And sort of the irony, I think, of what's happening right now is that even though we're dependent on technology, we're becoming hyper aware of how it's affecting us. Most people I talk to are saying, I'm tired of being on screen. I'm tired of watching these things. I have to find time to just put my phone away and not look at it. Even though it's the only way I can talk to people, it's getting at me. And it's almost like a cruel, ironic joke that this thing has isolated us and made us dependent on technology in a huge way, while at the same time giving us this new perspective of what it means to, you know, be with our family, what it means to take a minute and slow down, what it means to separate. What am I doing? What am I putting my time and energy in that is about a commercial success or a perceived success or a society success? And how does that ratio compare to the things that I do that just makes me happy, like being in the garden or working on an art project or sitting down and having a conversation with a loved one? You know, where is that balance and how has it gotten off?
And that kind of brings me back to, again, why this article really stuck out for me, because it highlighted this move that we've made to seeing success or happiness all derived from the economy of our actions and the economy of our society, and that our big thrust is to get out there and get the economy rolling. We've got to get the economy rolling. And I understand that we need to have money. That is the social construct that we've all bought into, is that we exchange money for goods, and we go to work to get money. You know, I understand that concept and the construct, but at the same time, has it become so exploitive because of marketing and sales and advertising that have created this world that was unsustainable for anyone? Just a very few could actually sustain themselves in this high-paced, you know, hyper-materialistic world that we have bought into. And how, you know, like you said, it's almost novel now to say, well, maybe I'll read a book, or I would slow down and do something else, because if we slow down, it's generally because we're sick, or we're, you know, we're out of work, and so we can't do those things, instead of what I think humans were really meant to do, which is spend time in your social group with your family or your chosen family, doing activities that bring you pleasure. And then you have times of productivity to get food and money, but not the other way around, where 90% of your, or, you know, 50% of your time is spent just accessing money so that you can get food. And then the other time is socializing through technology. I just don't think we were at a place prior to the pandemic that was supporting our mental health and well-being. And for those who don't know, that the title of the article that kind of started today's conversation is Prepare Yourself for the Ultimate Gaslighting. And gaslighting, by definition, means to manipulate someone by psychological means into questioning their own sanity. And so the drive of the article is, you're going to be told in the next few weeks that what happened just now wasn't as horrible as you thought it was, and just jump back into the way things used to be and everything will be fine. You can purchase your way back to the way things used to be. That's what's normal. And so if you're feeling that it's not okay or not normal, you're going to start feeling like the odd one out again. It's like, wait, I don't want to go back to this fast-paced life. I don't want to go back to having to work three jobs to pay my mortgage. But I guess that's what I need to buy into in order to get back to normal. My guest is Rhett Guter. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And our number is 805-549-8855 if you want to ask a question. And Carol, it looks like you have one.
I do. Christina called to say that she feels like the world usually seems too rushed. So actually the change of pace is welcome, and it's allowed her to reflect on the direction of her life. She's been teaching a popular exercise class, but she's come to the conclusion that she really doesn't love it anymore. So how could she figure out the next step?
Christina, I'm so glad you called. I wish you had zoomed in, because that is the conversation, I think, that was going to have to continue on, because I'm posing the question, but I don't know if I 100% have any real answer or direction, whereas Rhett said himself, he's not really sure what's going to happen after this. I think part of the conversation today is taking a step back and saying, before I start wishing myself back to my life prior pandemic, what was my life like prior to pandemic? And do I want to go back there? And I think, I guess part of what I'm asking just today is to even question that. But then what happens next is kind of the grand mystery, because a lot to do with what our tolerance is for discomfort and devastation and feeling kind of lost and kind of letting go of this version or view of who we were and what was expected prior to the pandemic and what it is we expect of ourselves moving forward. Because that space between who we used to be and where we're going can be a long, kind of dark and challenging process that's frightening and takes a lot of faith and takes a lot of tolerance for disappointment. And most of us, myself included, don't willingly ever want to jump into that abyss of change and the unknown. But Christina, this is your opportunity, because I think what Rhett hit on, which was brilliant before, is that for the first time probably in our lives, you can make those changes and just say, hey, life wasn't working out for me before. I'm walking, and nobody's going to judge you for it. Rhett?
Yeah. I think, you know, before you ask any question, you have to be ready to say, I don't know. So you have to admit that you don't know before you ask a question, right? Unless you're asking a rhetorical or hypothetical question. But if any of us are going to really say, what is next? Where do I go now? You have to prerequisite that with, I don't know. And I think that's really scary. In some ways, as an artist, as a theater artist, I feel that I've had a lot of practice at that, because we often don't know. You know, my gigs are usually 3 to 4 months long, and then they're done. You know, so finding mm-hmm. work is a full-time job, but having it really is interesting to be able to have the time to step back with, well, everybody is sort of forced to step back. You know, and going back to the article, get ready for the ultimate gaslighting, I would almost say get ready to return to the ultimate gaslighting. I mean, I sort of think the construct has been going on, you know, the story of this is the societal norm, this is what you buy into, this is what everyone does. As a couple of things, it billions of dollars has been put into that marketing strategy, and it gives you the answer. It says this is the answer, this is where you're supposed to be headed, mm-hmm. Which then shortchanges it feels good, because then we don't go through the, well, I don't know, because you do know, because there's a billboard telling you, or there's a commercial telling you what the direction is. So it feels good, and it's easier to take the bait. But now we've sort of been forced, more or less, to have this time where we have to have unknown and we have to not know. So I'd almost say to the author of that article is, get ready to return to the ultimate gaslighting. But now that we've had this new perspective and we've taken a step back, how are we going to approach it? And that's not to say that throw it all out and it's all bad and it's all evil. I just think that we get so caught up in trying to buy into the construct, we never find our own way. And that's where I think what's so interesting and revelatory to a lot of people is that we've now have an opportunity to find our own way instead of just buy into the construct and have a big house and make a lot of money and, you know.
And without the fear. But and also to be able to do it, I think the big freeing piece right now is there should be no fear of repercussions, because there's no one's going to judge you if you jump out of the story and say, I got to create my own. Yeah. And I'll let you know when I find it. Yeah. Carol, what do you got for us?
Oh, here's an interesting one for you, Elizabeth. James called, and he is wondering, what do you make of ex-girlfriends getting in touch with him? He says, for example, one woman he was serious about 9 years ago has been calling him and emailing him. What do you think?
Wow, that's like a whole other direction, James, but interesting, because maybe... I mean, Rhett is a bachelor, so he probably can relate to the dilemma of when we're on the edge of the apocalypse. I guess our first instinct is to reach out and try to find someone to go over the edge of the world with. I'm not surprised, because I would imagine that for a lot of people, you're feeling less restrictions or constraints in your behavior. It's like, I have nothing to lose now. We're all kind of messed up and wondering what's happening. I think I'll call the old boyfriends and do a check-in to see if maybe I missed out on something, or I'll find someone to quarantine with. Because Brett, you're so more hip with the modern culture, but isn't there something about quarantine buddies and people were, you know, kind of trying to get that person to quarantine with?
Yeah, I actually did have a conversation with a friend that she said she felt that sort of the week leading up to, you know, when the writing was on the wall, especially in New York, that several people sort of reached out and were like, hey, so, you know, we're going to be stuck inside for a while. Why don't we, you know? And she said, I really felt like there was this massive, like, find your quarantine buddy, find the person, you know, that you're going to be locked up with for the foreseeable future. And it's interesting. I shared with her, when it first happened, I was sad that I wasn't with somebody or didn't have a partner, a serious partner. And I was like, oh, well, I wish this is a time where I wish I had that. And then I would say 2 or 3 weeks into it, I was sort of like, I'm really glad that I just have this time by myself to, you know, do whatever I want and not be beholden to somebody else or shut up with somebody else. So it's interesting. I also think people are bored, and I think sometimes people are reaching out just to get some sort of, attention, romantic interest, even if it's just a conversation or starting, a romance up again. It feeds and feels good to have that. And that's a big part of social interaction. Even if we're not out looking for a partner, I think there's obviously an element of romance and flirting and sexuality that's always going around us. And now that's been seriously tampered, and shut down.
And trying to find it. And I think also the idea that boredom itself is not horrible. Boredom is how we come up with new creative ideas and how we find new ways of being and interacting. And I guess, in our last minute, I just want to encourage people to, even if this is annoying, to take this opportunity to really question what used to be. And instead of trying to fill every minute of the day being active, to see what it's like to just kind of slow down and sit in the discomfort, to sit in the not knowing, to sit in the place where you have no answers, because that's truly where our growth and life expansions happen, is in the darkest of places and the darkest of times. We emerge with a whole new light around us. And if we don't slow down and we don't sit in the darkness, we are destined to just go back to the way it used to be. And I don't know about you, but I don't know if the way it used to be is ideal for most of us. Rhett, thanks so much for being part of the conversation today. I loved seeing you. Hope we'll stay in touch. If you'd like to hear more of this conversation, you can go to the podcast and podcast A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can email me to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And as always, thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio and KCBX. I'll see you next week too.
There must be higher love.